Tsar's signature on a decree.
Rabbi Mladenovich, Tanya.
So he says,
December 9th.
Talks that way. That number one, even the historical events that things are alluding to often escape us. Meaning it was an encoded way of dealing with all sorts of events in our past. And sometimes those events could not be openly discussed. And that's even an example of just historical events that Agata refers to. And then the Maharal says, and Agata indeed also incorporates very, very deep spiritual lessons. So the Maharal really devoted his life, more or less, to the exposition of Agata in many, many contexts. He wrote in different forms. So his first work, the Shul has it, is the Gur Aryeh, which is a commentary on Rashi. In which, you know, when Rashi quotes Midrashim and the like, the Gur Aryeh explains it. He has a sefer on the Exodus, Gevuras Hashem, a sefer on Matan Torah, Tiferes Yisrael, a sefer on Mashiach and Gula, which is Netzach Yisrael, a commentary on Pirkei Avos, Derech HaChayim. He has a two-volume Musar book on Midos, Nesivos Olam, etc. So he wrote in different formats. And one of his formats, though, which was the last to be published, it was only discovered many years after his death, was actual Chidushim on the Agados of Shas, in the order of the Gemara itself. And these tend to be short points, but most of them are elaborated upon in his other svarim, which are thematic, as opposed to the Chidushim and Agadata, which go in the order of the order of Shas. Now, the Maharal was also a victim of both in his lifetime, but primarily after his death, of many, many forgeries. For example, the average person might not be familiar with the Maharal's writings, but everybody knows the story of the Maharal and the Golem. Right? Everyone knows the story of that. And the Golem was allegedly a figure made out of clay, a human-like figure that the Maharal was able to give some power of animation. And this Golem was said to kind of be like a superhero that would beat up the enemies and the like. And according to legend, the Golem is stored in the attic of the Maharal synagogue in Prague, a locked attic that nobody has access to. And there are recurring stories how in World War II, you know, the Nazis broke in and various things happened to them through the power of the Golem. Now, that there is such a thing as a Golem, generally, this is brought down in Kabbalistic Svarim, that there is a power that a human being has to make a Golem. Of course, because the Golem does not have a divine soul, the Golem does not have the power of speech, cannot speak, because that is a function of the Spirit of God that is within. But whether or not the Maharal himself made a Golem is a bit of a problem, because, you know, the Maharal died in the 16th century, the 1500s. And the very first mention of the Maharal making a Golem is the 1800s, the 19th century, by a fellow who actually had a reputation of forging many, many things. He was a forger in a number of ways. So whether or not the Maharal made a Golem is a real big problem. Of course, one could say on this, as one says about Hasidic stories generally, if you believe it happened, you're a fool, but if you believe it couldn't have happened, you're an apikoros. Meaning to say, the Maharal undoubtedly could have made a Golem if he wanted to, but there's no evidence that he particularly wanted to. It is brought down that the Vilna Gaon, when he was 13, made a Golem, but his father made him stop it. His father didn't want him to get involved in those things. But
on the Amazing Race, which is this TV program,
yeah,
they said the people in Prague had to make golems and take them to the synagogue. That was part of their challenge.
They had to make golems?
They had to make golems out of clay.
Yeah.
And take them to the synagogue.
Wow. So this was like a story that was explained to them?
It was like part of the Amazing Race. They do different tests.
Yeah.
The person does the quickest does the right test gets the reward. So one of their tests was to make golems and take it to the synagogue in Prague.
Wow, that's an amazing thing.
And, you know, here it was on TV. I mean, no,
Yeah, I'm surprised that it was such a well-known thing.
Now, the person was Jewish on this thing.
Now, the Maharal in his lifetime did become known as somewhat of a folk hero, even among the non-Jews, even among the Christians in Prague. He was just known as the Holy Rabbi. He was very, very esteemed by everybody. Now, he was also a victim of forgeries in some of his works. You know, we have one of the very well-known Haggadahs. The commentaries on the Haggadah is a commentary of the Maharal on the Haggadah. Now, if you look at it, you'll actually see it's a bit of a strange composition, because the Maharal himself wrote a whole long sefer on Yetzias Mitzrayim called Gevuras Hashem. It's a classic sefer. And in the Haggadah, in Gevuras Hashem, in the second half, is a commentary on the Haggadah. And that was incorporated. But then, in addition, there's a commentary which seems to be like 80% or 85% Gevuras Hashem, in other words, kind of paraphrase. But it also has extra stuff that's not in the Gevuras Hashem. And this Haggadah is attributed to the Maharal. But again, historians have said it was not the Maharal, it was somebody else who incorporated some of their own ideas in the Maharal's Haggadah. I'll give you one example. In the Maharal's Haggadah, there's a long arichas about fact that one should have a fifth cup at the Seder. Now, this is actually ultimately a machlokas in the Gemara that Rabbi Tarfon says. Well, actually, that's what talks about the Girsa. The Rashbam, and in Arvei Pesachim, takes out the word kos chamishi and changes the girsa to kos revi'i. So, according to the Rashbam's girsa, there is no such thing as a fifth cup. It isn't even mentioned. It's extinct. It is taken out. But many rishonim argaris that Rabbi Tarfon's shita is that you're supposed to drink a kais chamishi at the Seder. That's because there are actually five terms of redemption. Although we paskin four, Rabbi Tarfon does say five. And in the Haggadah of the Maharal, there's a long arichas, kind of a strange arichas, in which he says there should be a fifth cup, but the fifth cup should only be drunk by the one running the Seder. It shouldn't be drunk by anybody else. And there's a long arichas that explains that position, a very, very fascinating piece. But it's been pointed out that this contradicts the Maharal's maskana in Gevuras Hashem, and is evidence that that somebody else put this in, and it was more of a minhag of Hasidim to have a fifth cup. But what is written in the Haggadah is an interesting cheshbon, and that is that if you drink a fifth cup, where would you put it exactly? So that's also a big focus. Rav Nachum Kasher has like nine shitas where exactly you stick it in. But the basic orientation is, you know, on the fourth cup, we recite Hallel. And then after Hallel, we say what is called Hallel HaGadol, right? That's the Tehillim that says, Hodul Hashem Ki Tov Ki Lam Chasdo, etc. And then after Hallel HaGadol, we recite Nishmas. And we have a bracha, then we have the fourth cup. So the Maharal says, the Haggadah of the Maharal says, that if you have a fifth cup, the way you would do it is the following. You would recite the Hallel, including Nishmas, on the fourth cup. And then you would say Hallel HaGadol on the fifth cup. And the Cheshbon, he says, is the following. Why is Hallel HaGadol, the great Hallel, called the great Hallel? It's actually smaller, right? Regular Hallel is called Hallel HaMitzri, Egyptian Hallel. So why do you call the great Hallel great Hallel? So the Gemara says in Pesachim, because it contains the verse, No sein lechem v'chol basar. Hashem gives bread to all flesh. That's a wonderful thing that Hashem gives parnasa to the world. That's Gadol. So the Maharal says, that means Hallel HaMitzri is about redemption, Geula, and Hallel HaGadol is about Parnassa. And Parnassa is even greater than Geula, because Geula is a one-time thing. I'm enslaved, I'm imprisoned, I get liberated. Parnassa is maintenance and upkeep. And that's even a greater accomplishment. Memela, Kais Revi is on Geula, as all the Kosas are. Kais Chamishi is a Shevach for Parnassa. So the Haggadah of the Maral says, since it is a special praise to God for Parnassa, it is the breadwinner of the family, so to speak, who should drink the Kos Chamishi and recite the Halal Haggadah. Of course, I don't know if maybe in a Kolo house that would mean the wife would drink the Kos Chamishi. I don't know. But he says that the Bala Bayis should drink the Kos Chamishi. It's a very beautiful explanation, but as I say, it does contradict the Ruas Hashem, and many say that it is not from the Maral. So, once again, you have examples of not so much a forgery, but again, sometimes people would try to bring in other ideas and to incorporate it under the name of the Maral. That's a fairly time-honored practice that sometimes you... In fact, the Gemara indicates the Summa Maraim even did that. That mm-hmm. sometimes, if you were convinced of the truth of something, you would actually attribute it to somebody greater than you, so it would get the imprimatur of a source. The Gemara itself says that was sometimes done. Of course, it's reminiscent. I have to look. I don't remember where it is, but the Gemara indicates that somebody said it bedafka in the name of someone he didn't hear it from.
That's reverse plagiarism.
It's reverse plagiarism. It's the playwright. See, today everyone takes credit for what they didn't say. Here is, you give it to somebody else. On the other hand, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach once said that he considered that worse. Somebody once complained to him. He says, they heard somebody give a drasha, somebody gave a shir, and they said all of your chidushim in their own names, if they thought of it, when I know that they heard it from me. So he said, I don't mind if they say my stuff in their name, as long as they don't say their stuff in my name. He says, that's much worse. I don't want to be saddled with what somebody else said. So I just wanted to go over just a little shtickle of the Maral. The Maral has a whole sefer.
On that fifth post, you would have said a bracha.
You would say a bracha, yeah. Yeah, you would make
and,
a bracha.
And would you have called the Kavar bracha Shinesrifa?
Well, if there's an opinion in the Gemara that says you have five cups, and you're machriya lahalacha that you should drink five cups, then it's the same issue as making a bracha. I mean, listen, according to the Mechaber, you only make a bracha on the first and the third cup anyway. So you wouldn't make a bracha on the fifth cup. But if you hold, like we hold, that since every cup is a mitzvah, every cup has its own bracha, it would include a bracha on the fifth cup. Like the Sfardim, you would, assuming you would drink a Kos Chamishi, you would not make a bracha.
I mean, even according to Rabbi Tarfon, the fifth could have been Kos Shalaviyo. And that would not require a bracha. So make a bracha. In other words, the halacha...
Why does Kosher Aliyah not require a bracha? That's if you
don't drink it.
That's if you don't drink it.
Right. You don't drink it.
I understand, but Rav Tarfon says you have to drink it.
So, I didn't know Rav Tarfon said you have to drink it.
Rav Tarfon says you have to drink the Kos Chamishi. So if that's the case, so you'd make a bracha on it, like Ashkenazim. Now, the Maral actually wrote a whole sefer on Hanukkah. It's called Ner Mitzvah. And it's a very, very interesting sefer. It's not that long. It's around 20 pages, so it's a dense sefer, like always. And the overall theme of Ner Mitzvah is his primary discussion about the four Malchias, the four kingdoms. There is this concept that the exiles of the Jewish people from Mitzrayim onwards, meaning after we came to Eretz Yisrael, there are four kingdoms that will rule us until the coming of the Mashiach. This primarily emerges from many nevuas in Daniel. Daniel has many, many visions and dreams. Daniel is at the beginning of the Babylonian exile. Four animals, four types of animals, four types of metals. All of this is a remez to the four Malchios. And what are the four Malchios, though, are not really defined in the Pasuk. So Chazal typically identify them as the first Malchus is Bavel, Babylonia. They destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. The second Malchus that took Babylonia over was Persia, which conquered the Babylonian Empire. The third is Yavan, Greece, which represents Alexander the Great, who conquered the Persian Empire. And of course, Alexander was succeeded by his successors, including the Seleucid Dynasty in Syria, which is Antiochus, and the like. And the fourth Malchus is considered to be Rome. Because remember, in the Hanukkah story is, in the rebellion against Antiochus, the Hashmonaim established their own Malchus that lasted for around 100 years, and then the Romans took over. Now, based on that, Rome is considered to be the last of the exiles. So the question is, we are now, Chazal identify Rome as coming from Edom, coming from Esav, although that's not so clear either. And the question is, so why are we still in Golus Edom? What makes, I mean, we're not, the Romans don't rule over us today. So the assumption is that Western civilization, and particularly its encounter with Christianity, is still said to be the outgrowth of Rome, both in terms of the secular culture, the alphabet, the legal system. You know, Western civilization is largely a product of Rome, and the impact, the enormous impact of Christianity, Catholicism in particular, on European history, where Jews mainly lived, is considered to be coming from Edom. Now, what's interesting is, therefore, according to Chazal, it's Bavel, Paras, Yavan, and Edom. And the song that we sing, Ma'osur, right, if you look at it, Ma'osur, which we sing after we light Hanukkah candles, or say, or whatever, sing or say, Ma'osur is a song about the downfall of the four Malchias. It starts with Mitzrayim. Ma'osur is the general stanza of praise. Ra'os Savanafshi is about Mitzrayim. So it gives Mitzrayim. Then the next stanza is Bavel, Paras, which is about Haman, and then Yevanim, Nikvatsu Alai. And then the last stanza is asking Hashem, just as we have been redeemed from Bavel, Paras, and Yavan, may we also be redeemed from Edom. And that last stanza has undergone a lot of censorship. That's why if you're reading from two different siddurim, you'll see different words. The original text of that last stanza was Meche Pesha, the Gamresha, erase the evil empire, or Dechei Admon, Betzel Salmon, etc. And then it gets censored in various ways in which you're not making a direct... Yeah, I'm sorry, Dechei Pesh is the censored version. The original version is what has now been restored, Dechei Admon, Betzel Salmon. That means push aside the red one, Esav, and bring him to the shadows of death. And that's Uma HaRasha. And that's been censored in various ways, and that's why other Siddurim have different texts which talk about evil in general but don't correlate it to the evil empire, so to speak.
Some people ended at Yavanim?
It could be. I wasn't aware of that, but it could be because of that last stanza.
One could be interpreted as the communism doctrine.
Well, some say Ered, right? Some say the connection of Ered is Esav also. Now, the thing is this. The Ibn Ezra, in his commentary to Daniel, actually differs with Chazal. Chazal uniformly identify the four Malchias, or the fourth Malchus, as Edom or Esav. And of course, this was the Malchus they lived under, both in Eretz Israel, they lived under the Roman Empire. In Babylonia, they lived primarily under various Persian empires, but in the time of the Gemara, the Babylonian Empire was relatively benign. It was not the Chaldean empire that destroyed the first base of Mikdash. It was the Sasanian Empire, which was pretty good, as opposed to the Roman Empire in Eretz Yisrael. But the Ibn Ezra, who lived in Islamic countries after the rise of Islam, actually identifies the fourth Malchus as Yishmael. And he says that the four Malchus are Bavel is number one, Paras is number two, Yavan and Edom are considered to be one, because culturally, Greece and Rome were a continuum. And Yishmael is the Malchus HaRavi. Now, of course, the Ibn Ezra lived... The Ibn Ezra lived at a time... he lived in Islamic countries, and he lived at a time when the power of Islam was at its height. Interestingly enough, we live at a time as well when Islamic fundamentalism is so powerful in terms of the terrorism and the state of fear that it has so much of the world. And although it's interesting that in the mainstream Gemara and Midrash, the fourth Malchus is always Edom, we do have, after 9/11, people unearthed various Midrashim that people didn't notice before. And indeed, there are a number of Midrashim that say that the final enemy before the coming of Mashiach, that will try to prevent Am Yisrael from achieving its Geula, will be Malchus Yishmael. And again, this Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, which is a very old Medrash, actually says that. And Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer actually says that Yishmael is the most dangerous enemy of all, because it is the only nation besides the Jews that has God's name in their national identity. Yisrael is, you have succeeded, you have triumphed with the Almighty, and Yishmael means God shall hear you. God shall hear your prayer. Now, what that indicates is that Yishmael, in some sense, has a spiritual power that other nations do not have. And again, it's perverse to consider this, but you know, basically, most nations are motivated by taiva. They want wealth. They want power. Here, you at least have at least certain groups who are devoted by a perversity, to be sure, but a perversity of religious fanatical commitments. People who are willing to live in poverty, people who are willing to blow themselves up along with other people, etc. And as evil and perverted as this is, it represents a commitment to a certain ideal, which gives them power and force. Again, there is power to even fanatical ideals when people do not care about comfort and the like. So there is this machlokus, if the fourth malchus is malchus Edaim, or the fourth malchus is malchus Yishmael. The Maral, who of course lived in Catholic Europe,
he's going to teach Maral. Is he doing it next? He's just this week, and that's it.
Break.
He's not doing any more answers.
Just tonight.
Next week he's going to do it. But when he comes, he's not doing it anymore. Wednesdays. That's what he said.
Send email.
He didn't finalize it. I was doing Maral. Who could do Maral?